Oh, and welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and my guest today is my pal, Erin Skye Kelly. She's got a new book out called Naked Money Meetings, Ending Money Fights with Your Partner Forever. This is her second time on the podcast. She was previously here to talk about a very different topic. And that was years ago, but she is hilarious. And this is one of those conversations that you might want to check out the video on YouTube simply because there are many moments when she and I are giggling, covering our mouths, snorting. There's a lot of facial expressions going on, and we laugh a lot in this one. We have a lot of fun. It is silly and ridiculous and absurd at times, but I do want to get across the point that Erin Skye Kelly is a genius when it comes to finances and debt. She's a former mortgage broker. She's been working with individuals and couples for decades around money, around budgets, around debt, around all those hard financial conversations. She has shared the stage with Tony Robbins. She's taught loads of seminars and workshops. She has a two-day transformation weekend. She knows her stuff. I've read about two-thirds of the new book. It's outstanding. I really like it. My girlfriend Kendra Adachi is going to read it. We're going to have some conversations. It's going to improve and enhance our partnership. And I just have nothing but great things to say about Erin. She is fun and playful, and she has a way of communicating huge ideas about big topics in a way that feels very understandable and relatable and compassionate. And as we talk about in this conversation, this book is actually not just about money and budgeting and fights. It's about personal development, and it is packaged up in a really great way, and I enjoyed it, and I enjoy Erin Skye Kelly a whole lot. She's great, and I think that you're going to love this one. So I've included links in the show notes to all of her stuff. You can check the books out. You can follow her on Instagram, etc. Without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Erin Skye Kelly.
I can't stop laughing.
Okay, we're recording now, so behave. Or actually, misbehave.
I've already been laughing for so long. My stomach already hurts. Like, you're going to give me gas.
That's setting the tone right there. 16 seconds in. But you just said before I pushed record, maybe we'll suck and we'll be done in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I just thought, that would be such a hilarious thing to, because I record the intros after, and yeah. I would have to address the fact that Erin Skye Kelly's episode is an eighth as long as a normal episode. And like, yeah, we suck. Buy her new book and follow her work. It's great. But I have to bring up Beyonce's butt crack because you just mentioned it.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe you could lead with that and introduce yourself.
It's on my resume.
Yeah.
Jeremy and I were just talking about how I don't get starstruck. I work with a lot of celebrities, always have. Like, my media career before I became an author was really like in TV and radio. And I worked at MTV, which was my big dream when I was a little kid. I always wanted to work at MTV, but I never get starstruck. I just don't. And so we were just talking about that. And I don't know, I made some comment about how I've seen Beyonce's butt crack, and now I've somehow been elevated in your friend. Like, you're going to call me more. You can be like, you're going to tell your other friends. You'll be like, my friend, Erin Skye Kelly, who's seen Beyonce's butt crack. Like, you're going to lead into sentences with that now, I feel like.
I mean, maybe. Do you know Vienna Farren?
Yes, I love her.
She's amazing. And yeah. A random fact about her that's unrelated to butt cracks is she performed at, I think it was Whitney Houston's wedding.
What?
I know.
Like, she sings or dance?
I want to say it was a violin.
Oh, that makes more sense. Because I was like, I cannot picture her doing hip hop. She's so like refined and graceful and elegant, you know?
Yeah.
Okay,
but
wait.
Anyway.
So Whitney Houston's wedding?
Wedding, yeah.
To Bobby Brown?
Look, I'm not 100% sure of the details of this
story.
You
text her right now. We have to get to the bottom of this by the time this podcast finishes. We got to find out, Vienna. We need to know more details about this Whitney thing.
But I have my phone on airplane mode because I try to not to... I'm going to send her a text right now. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Well, hang on. Why don't I ask you a question and you can talk while
you text her.
Yeah.
Genius.
We're a team. This podcast is a team effort. We're building something together. This is a collaboration.
It is.
But I do have a question, which was, what did you do at MTV? Like, I don't think that I knew that, or if I did, I forgot. Like, what was your
role? Oh my gosh.
What was it like?
I don't talk about it very often. I started, okay, so the long version of the story, so that you can text Vienna, is that when I was a kid, I really wanted to work there. And so I went to broadcasting school. And then in order to graduate broadcasting school, you had to have an internship. And I was like, I'm not doing one of those unpaid internships. If I'm doing an internship, I'm doing it at MTV. Right. So I applied at MTV New York and MTV Networks Europe in London. And I didn't get either of them. And so I started mailing the HR department a package a week because I was like, I really want an internship here. So I would, from Canada, I would mail these huge boxes over to this lady, Mira Livingston, 180 Oxford Street, London, UK, W93DD. Like, I did it every week. And so it would say things like, for your talent pool. And she would like open up the box and there'd be like water wings and a Speedo and like giant sunglasses and, you know, and then my tape. Cool. Yeah. And then the next week it'd be something else. And once a week, it cost me so much money. Like, I use my student loans for this. And so she would eventually started to reply back and say, no, unfortunately, you know, you have to have a work visa, you know, in order. So then I went and got a work visa and then I'd be like, hi, Mira, I have my work visa. Like, I'm sure she thought I was psychotic, but to me, I was just like, oh, this is dedication. Anyway. So I'd send her another one. And then she's like, you know, you have to actually be living here and you have to have a UK address. So I moved to the UK, and this is before we had the internet, right before we had the internet. So I had to like book a place from a newspaper and like fly over and rent. I can't remember what it was. It was an exorbitant amount of money to me at the time for this like tiny little flat that had carpet in the bathroom. Like, it was just disgusting. But I was like, okay, Mira, got myself an address. Here's my new address. And I'd ship her a new package every week. And eventually she called and she did say to me, you are psychotic, but I want to hire you. And so I got the MTV internship. So I started as an intern and I would just, what's called log tape. So I'd have to watch, this is before AI or transcription existed. So that was me. With my little headphones on, I'd sit in front of a VHS machine or a Betamax machine and watch Backstreet Boys videos and Britney Spears videos. And I'd transcribe everything they said and mark the time that they said it so that the editors could have an easier time accessing footage if they ever needed it. And then I worked my way up and I became an assistant music director. And then we opened MTV Canada eventually. So I flew back home and like did that. And that's my story called How I Saw Beyonce's Butt Crack.
That's beautiful. I love that. It's just, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? It reminds me of that old adage.
And I think I just...
Like quirky wheel.
Yeah, I just didn't have any other options because it was all I wanted. And at the time, it just seemed like, I don't know what else I'm going to do. So here I go, Mira Livingston, wherever she is now.
Yeah.
Like,
and you still remember her address.
I do, 180 Oxford. I do, because I mailed something every week for a year and a half. So, yeah, long time. But anyway, that's my MTV story. But that kind of gives you an idea of why now, in my old age, I don't talk about it so much anymore, because it's like all the kids are like, that's not cool. None of that story is cool. But to people over the age of 35, they're like, it's medium cool.
I think it's super cool. I just like stories of people overcoming adversity, identifying something that they want, pursuing a big dream, like going after it.
Don't make me sound like I'm an Olympian or anything like that. Like, or that I, you know, there's a lot of people who deserve that. I just went to the post office once a week and annoyed this lady who lived across the pond.
Yeah. Well, you're an Olympian. Like, if weird, persistent, quasi-psychotic behavior in the pursuit of an unpaid internship was an Olympic sport, you'd be on the podium.
I would. I would. I'd at least be bronze for sure.
I'm going to get a random message from someone listening that's like, actually, I have a story for you.
I'm like, I can't wait.
Okay, but Aaron Sky Kelly, for real, for people listening that haven't listened to the first episode when you were on the podcast, which is so good, I recall you talking about how you left your mom at a gas station on the side of the highway and didn't talk to her again.
We don't talk about that, though, because after that podcast aired, she slapped me with a cease and desist letter, which I punched back with another letter. It's a whole complicated story.
Okay.
So I won't really talk about it anymore. But what we can say is that, you know, when I was on your podcast, we talked about some very serious, like, family stuff. And I had to make some hard decisions in my life. And it turns out they were really, really great decisions, really healing decisions in the long run. And so there's a lot of people out there that I think get stuck in those patterns that are really unhealthy. And sometimes the only way to break them is to break them.
Yes. Amen. Mm-hmm. And so that was the previous conversation.
Yeah.
Which is on the internet. If you're listening, you can go and download it. If you're already smitten with Aaron Sky Kelly and her sense of humor and her peculiar way of experiencing the world. But those that haven't heard that, don't know you, like, how do you describe yourself? Who are you? What's your deal?
Yeah, you know, I don't even know. This is so fun because when you and I became friends, it was like we just met and it was like we didn't know anything about each other's background or history or whatever. We just met human to human. And that's my very favorite way to experience life. But of course, we all have all of these labels and titles that people like to put on us to try and like figure that out. And for me, I don't know the answer to that. I'm still figuring it out. But in the meantime, I write books. I'm a podcaster. I work for some super cool big time celebrity people. I just do neat things. I just like to experience the world and share what I experience, and off we go. So why I'm here today, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, is to talk about my book, Naked Money Meetings, which is my newest book that I've written and that you read on the beach while Kendra sunned her butthole, I think is what she was doing in that Instagram video.
It's a butt-themed conversation.
It is a butt-themed conversation.
She, to be fair to Kendra, at that time that I was reading, she was not sunning her butthole. Oh. She was just tanning as a normal person laying on the beach.
I don't think I can see Kendra laying out in the sun and not be like, oh, she's tanning her butt. Like, she's so in tune with herself and so in tune with nature and so like energetically connected that if you're like, she's just laying down like a, I'd be like, no, there's a deeper meaning here for sure.
You're 100% correct. So I would describe things very simply from my science analytical brain. It's like woman lay on beach, for example. And I'm sure that Kendra would suggest that she was, you know, filling her cup with divine energy and solar powered truth or some such thing, which is amazing. And
she is that. Amazing.
Yeah. But you wrote a second book called Naked. This is actually a segue. Naked Money Meetings.
Yes.
Your first book was called Get the Hell Out of Debt. If you're watching on YouTube, you could see Aaron has the books behind her. They look great. But so this leads me to believe that you are involved in the financial area, this space of money and debt and budgets, which I don't know if you mentioned that in your description of your life a moment ago.
Probably important to do.
I may give you a moment now to go ahead and buy some expertise or credentials.
This is the problem with being friends is we're just joking around and it's, yeah. Like, you know, but I do actual very serious work.
You do very serious work and you're like
a genius at it and you have decades of experience and you write books and you are renowned and you have big, good ideas.
Yes. And I'm also ridiculous sometimes too. So I'll behave from here on in. Okay. Starting sure. Now, I'm going to be serious. Yes. So I always have been involved a little bit in finance because when I wanted to go into broadcasting and media, when I was a teenager, my grandfather, who was like one of the most influential people in my life, really, really smart man, really kind to me my whole life, like just one of the most impactful people in my life. Big, huge Lebanese man said to me, well, it's great that you want to be in media, but one day, because you're a woman, you're going to be old and ugly and no one will put you on TV. So you need a backup plan. And so he meant that. He didn't mean it as mean. I mean, it was 1980 something when he said this, right? Or 1990 maybe. And what he meant was sometimes when you put your career in other people's hands, it doesn't go the way you want it to. So there's got to be an element of your financial future that you stay in control of. That was what I interpreted anyway, thank goodness, right? And he was right. And I'm not somebody that wanted to be on TV for attention's sake or wanting to be, I just wanted to like share people's stories and stuff like that. That was more what I was interested in. And so what happened was I became a real estate investor on the side when I was in my teens. I started to buy real estate and rent it out and started to learn about money and do all that stuff. So I was always like working in media. So even when I was working over across, you know, in London at MTV, I had real estate in North America that I was renting out. So I really learned a lot about money quite quickly. And then because I was in my late teens and early 20s, talking to other people who were my age, I realized, gosh, like people really don't know how money works. It's such a mystery to so many people and it doesn't need to be. It really is something that has the power to like help you kind of make your dreams come true, right? I think we often think we have to chase the dream and then the money will follow. But that's not always true. You can build really healthy financial practices and those can help your dreams come true. Also, it just really allows you a lot of freedom when you understand the flow of income in and out of your life. And so that's sort of what started the writing of the books, because when the pandemic hit, I suddenly couldn't do live events with people and like teach them or coach them in the classroom style that we had before. So I wrote the book in order to be able to help them. And then subsequently the second book, Naked Money Meetings, was born. After the first one did so well.
Yeah. And so when you were 18, 19, 20, purchasing property in a different country, like where did that knowledge come from or what caused that?
You know, it was a lot of stupidity, honestly. Like, you know, when you're young, you're like, like you're invincible, right? I don't think I realized like what could potentially go wrong. So I just went for it. I didn't know any better. And so I just went for it, which turned out to be a really good thing. And I think that happens for a lot of people where, you know, we all know we ought to be investing, whether it be in real estate or exchange traded funds or stocks or businesses, or whatever interests you. But so many people don't because of the risk. They're like, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake. I'm afraid I'm going to lose money. And what ends up happening is they lose money because they lose out on opportunity cost and they never go after the things that they need to do when sometimes the best education is diving in and learning as you go.
Mm. Yeah, for any number of things such as mm-hmm. relationships, life. It's like wisdom acquisition requires some risk and some failure and some lessons learned.
Yes.
Some life slaps to the face here and there.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you were in media, you had a house or apartment or whatever in Canada, you're living your life. At some point you decide to get into the sort of personal development, financial advising space, or I'm just trying to like track your trajectory a little
bit. Yeah. It's all an accident. Actually, it was all a very, very happy accident. I don't think I was like, oh, I love personal development. Like I want to do that, right? I just had sort of read a couple of books and got interested in a couple of things. I read a book called Awaken the Giant Within when I was over in London. We had a tube strike, which those of you who live in the UK, you know, it's mass pandemonium when there's a tube strike and there's no trains running and whatever else. And so I was stuck in a WH Smith in a train station looking for something to read. And, you know, there's the top 10 books. I'd never read a nonfiction book in my life, but there was this guy with like really big teeth And I also have really big teeth. So I was like, I think I could relate to this guy. And so his name was Anthony Robbins. And so I get this book called Awaken the Giant Within, and I read it, and instantly my life changes for the better. And I don't even know how to describe it, because I don't know even if I could describe what it was like before. I just suddenly afterwards, I felt like, oh, I get it. I'm here for a reason. You're here for a reason. We're all here for a reason. And we've got to figure that out and start living that today, even if we don't understand why, right? So I was really quickly able to figure out, like, my life's purpose is letting the people around me feel seen, heard, and loved. And so I can do that if I'm standing in line at Safeway. I can do that if I'm helping them with their budgets. I can do that wherever I'm at. And so I had to start like living that out. So Awaken the Giant Within was this transformative moment for me. And I kind of became not a Tony Robbins fan, but like I just was in the world. You know, I start consuming a bit of his content. I went to a couple of his events, like they're life-changing, incredible events, did that whole thing. And then just along the way in my own world was asked to like speak at things and, you know, do certain things and whatever else. And so I, at one point in my life, I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I was hosting these events called Transformation Weekend. We still host them there once a year, big annual event in January. It sets your year up for success kind of thing, right? Like a kind of everybody gets together for this couple days of immersion. I've been doing this for, I don't know how long, 10 years or more at the time. And I think to myself, you know what I'm going to do for our 10th anniversary? I'm going to see if I can get Tony Robbins to come speak at Transformation Weekend. Like, I wonder what that costs, right? It's got to be, I'm thinking to myself, it's got to be $8 billion, but like, let's see how much it is. So I contact his office and I'm like, what does it cost to get Tony to come speak at an event? And she, the lady who I now know, but she laughs at me and she's like, oh, honey, you know, she's like,
it's adorable that you think that that's
so cute that you want to do this little thing. She says, we actually only work with one Canadian promoter and, you know, this is his name and whatever, but she CCs him on the email. And so then now I got this guy's email, and you know me, I'm persistent MTV woman. You know what's going to happen next, right? So I email this guy and he doesn't reply. So I like email him again and he doesn't reply. What I later learned is I wasn't actually trying to get him to come to Canada so I could promote his event. But I didn't know the right lingo at the time in events. So I asked the wrong questions. And so that's how this all happened. Happy accident. Anyway, this guy won't return my email. His name was Salim. Just cool guy. He's unfortunately passed away, which was like heartbreaking for me end of last year, but funniest guy. So he doesn't like, won't return my call. So I email transfer him, which is kind of like Venmo. So back when email money transfers first happened, you had to have a password in order to receive them. So I email transferred him this random amount of money, like $874.12. And then when it says, you know, for the password, I say, for the password call 403. Blah, blah, blah. And I write my phone number in there. So he picks up the phone and I get this phone call. He's like, hey, what's this money for? I was like, Salim, it's Aaron Sky Kelly. How are you? And he laughed and laughed and laughed. He was like, okay, fine. I'll meet you for coffee. He's like, I'm going to be in Vancouver next week. Where are you? I'm like, I'm going to be in Vancouver next week too. I was not going to be in Vancouver. I had to get a ticket and go to Vancouver. But anyway, the goober cashed the money, but it was worth it because what ended up happening was from there, he had me speak on some stages that Tony was speaking at. And so I got a new exposure into that personal development realm. And that was sort of how that transition happened.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So then that MTV story that you told at the beginning is relevant.
I guess it's relevant.
It all works out.
It always does. And that's what's cool about when you, sometimes you do the thing that's in front of you, even though you can't connect to why, but when you feel pulled or called towards it, the answer is always revealed in time. Like there's so many things in my life where I look now that at the time made no sense, but now, you know, you can kind of see the tapestry, like how it's being woven together in such a divine way that it's like, it's cool. Happy accident, right? Like it was meant to be.
Yeah. I call them heart whispers.
Yeah.
Just these little like, hey, buy a one-way flight to Europe and walk across Spain. And it's like, no brain, no heart. Like that's stupid. That makes no sense, but I can't not do it.
And right? Now you're the Camino guy.
Now I'm the Camino guy.
Yes. Also, by the way, how are you? Like, have you recovered? Are your bones okay? Does your butt hurt when you sit down? Like, are you?
Aaron, like, look, I am a mountain of man. Like I am strong like ox. Like
specimen.
That was 2 months ago.
I'm asking because I would still be hobbling. I would.
But yes, thank you for asking. I am recovered. I'm doing well. I find that like on the second week after, I'm feeling pretty human again. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about doing two Caminos this next summer as just a...
Yes.
There's one of those little heart whisper things that the seed's been planted and I just want to know what that's like for me to try and do that.
Yeah. And like the... It must be amazing. Like when you're out there with people who are walking it with you, you must see, and you probably still experience it every time. Cause as you know, like you hit a new level of growth, even though you've done the thing before. Now, when you go to do the Camino again, you're a different man. So you're facing the Camino now as a new man. And so you're having a new level of growth, right?
Yeah.
But like you're also walking with people who are probably, I don't know, like crying, having huge breakthroughs, having to push through things that are like, that must be such a crazy container to hold. How do you do that?
I feel like now I'm on your podcast. It is a crazy container to hold. And I do it to the best of my ability with a lot of imperfection and humility each time. I think on this last trip on like the second or third day, I was crying at dinner because it wasn't something had happened. It's a longer story, but it wasn't going like I thought it needed to be going. And it wasn't happening like I hoped that it would. And I have very high expectations and lots of hopes and dreams. And I just was like, look, this is really hard. Like to lead this is really hard. This is not like other retreats that I lead where we go to a resort and we do yoga and we have a chef and they cook us stuff. Like, I'm also doing all of this crazy physically demanding stuff along with you. And I'm also not sleeping well. And I'm also like going through my own things that come up while trying to hold a container of 10 people who are, having transformational breakthroughs and trying to coax them through that and support it, blah, blah, blah. So it's a crazy thing. It is the wildest, craziest thing. Every person that I've taken on that trip has cried.
I can't even imagine not crying. Like it just would be, I did it virtually during the pandemic.
Yeah, I remember we bonded over that.
Nothing at all like you did, but I did it because I was like, I wanted to go that year and the pandemic happened and it was like 779 kilometers or something like that. I can't remember the number, but anyway, I did 779 and I did it around my neighborhood in suburbia and cried. You know what I mean? And I slept in my own bed. You know what I did? Like it is so hard mentally. And so it's so cool that you have that. Are you compartmentalizing when you're doing it with people? Like, are you like, oh, I'll deal with my stuff later. This person's is more urgent. Or are you like literally going through it at the same time?
It depends. Like sometimes both. Like I had a really great conversation with a woman in a random lunch spot about alcoholism and sobriety and motherhood. And you know, I'm in it all. Like, you know, that's a tender spot for me. So we were bonding. And then other times I just have on, you know, I'm sure that you do also at times at events or coaching calls where I'm like, put the hat on. I'm like, no. Like my shit is irrelevant at this moment and I'm dropping in and I got you and let's go.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it's wild. It's a wild thing. And
it's such a good metaphor for everything, right? Because it's like 100%. The Camino is like such a, I'm talking like, I know, did you hear how I just said that? Like I was about to give you.
You walked it.
But anytime you walked it in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, control, temperature control without a backpack. But what's anytime you put yourself through like that kind of, it's more, even though it's a physical challenge, it must be more mental than anything else. But anytime you do that for yourself, it's such a metaphor for everything. Like you think it's about the walk or you think it's about the blisters or you think it's, and it's right. Like it's such a magnifier for so many other things.
Yeah. And, you know, you get to your edge, there's no makeup, there's no mask, there's no disguises, there's no costumes. At some point you are so exhausted, you can't maintain the energy or desire to not just be who you are with what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. But if I may attempt to transition this back to a podcast where you are the guest.
Listen, people are here for you. I'm just doing what the people want. I'm giving them what they want.
People what they want. But I was actually going to bring this up. So this is a good point. When you're talking about the Camino being, it's not about the walk. It's actually about the transformation that's happening. And the Camino is just kind of the thing that brings that along and alive. I have had several thoughts when I'm reading your book, the new one, Naked Money Meetings, where I've had this moment and I like shake my head in admiration thinking, oh, this is a personal development book. Like, this is not a book about money at all. She's done a really clever, hilarious, excellent job of marketing this as, oh, this is about budgets and money and finances. But a lot of the content is very Trojan horse-like delivered about awareness, emotional intelligence, holding space, having boundaries. And so I wonder if you could speak to some of that.
Pierre.
Yeah.
I've been on, I don't know how many podcasts and done all the media stuff or whatever for this book. You are the first person and the only person to recognize and know that.
Really?
That's super cool. Yes. Yes. Cause everybody's like, oh, tell me about the numbers and tell me about the whatever. It's super cool. But here's the truth is when we struggle with money, if we struggle with cash flow, if we struggle with keeping a job, if we struggle with fighting with our partner when it comes to money, it's not about the money. It never is. And so people think like, oh, my credit card debt is about the fact that I suck at math, or my credit card debt is about, you know, whatever. It's not at all ever about that. It's about something much deeper. And so it doesn't help unless we heal the thing that's much deeper. It's like the you know, Oprah Winfrey, when she would diet and, you know, gain weight and diet and gain weight and diet and gain weight. And so every new diet, she kept thinking it was about the diet, if I just get the right diet. So she did the cabbage diet and the grapefruit diet. And then she did the Weight Watchers diet. Then she did, you know, and remember one time she pulled the big famous wagon of butter out, you know, and she pulled this wagon out on stage and it had like 55 pounds of butter representing the 55 pounds she lost. And she's like, that's it. It's gone forever. And then like 6 months later, right? People do that with their money all the time because they think it's about the money, and it's not about the money. And it's not until you can heal that stuff underneath and really make peace with your relationship to money and your relationship to yourself that you find the financial freedom. So it is so true. The book is, there are very practical, tactical ways to get wealthy in that book, but there's also ways that you can heal your relationship to your finances that go beyond the wallet.
Yeah. And you're doing it in partnership as well, which is an added dimension of complexity and detail required.
Yeah.
Right. And so in the way that I walked across the Camino, and that was hard and it was like, whatever, but then you throw other people's stuff into the mix and suddenly it becomes exponentially more difficult. Right.
Yes.
And so maybe can you just give like a quick couple sentence synopsis of like what the book is, or perhaps like why you wrote it, you know, what's the, yeah, why is it needed?
I haven't told this story before, but I'm going to tell you because you're my friend, because okay, you're going to get all the juice.
Yeah. Give me the good stuff.
One time I was working with this couple. I was doing a mortgage for them. So side note, I'm also a licensed mortgage associate. I don't actually practice anymore. I know. I have a team of people that do all the mortgage stuff and they're brilliant at what they do. But I more oversee how we do the mortgages and how we set them up, because I think people don't understand mortgages and they think it's all about the interest rate, and it's not. It's about how the interest is compounded. That actually affects things even more. And there's all these other things hidden in mortgages to make them sellable or palatable for people to take on debt. So I just side note, when I became a real estate investor, I also became a mortgage broker, blah, blah, blah. But I was sitting down in front of this one couple one time. I have to think of fake names for them. Harold. Peggy.
Yeah. Harold and Peggy.
Harold and Peggy. Okay. They were sitting in front of me and I was like, in my soul, I was begging them to get a divorce. Cause I was like, they just make each other miserable. The way they spoke to each other in front of me, like, she was like rolling her eyes at everything he was doing. And he was like making snide little remarks at her. And I thought, this is so normal for them that they're doing it in front of a stranger. Like, they're so comfortable in these roles of, my husband's an idiot, don't mind him. And, you know, he's comfortable being like, oh, nothing makes Queen, you know, Peggy, thank you, happy. And I was like, so it's like, it doesn't matter what financial solution I present, they're going to tear down anything we build up. They're so unhealthy when it comes to their own relationship. They're so unhealthy when it comes to their own identities, like how they see themselves. So I had this moment, like this flash with the two of them of like, I wonder what, how they got here. So I started to like, you know, my drive home, I was thinking like, what made her get to the point where every time this guy opens her mouth, she's rolling her eyes? What had to have happened to her? What hurt did she have to go through? What is she trying to protect? Who is she trying to make me think? Like, is she trying to make me think that she's more likable because he's so stupid? Like, what is the, so I really dug deep into like all of that sort of like pattern recognition as to why people were doing the things that they were doing. And what I uncovered in that work was like this moment of like, you know, we all have these moments of brilliance. Mine are always in the shower. I don't know why, which means that's why I have a whiteboard in my shower now. Cause by the time I get out of the shower, I've already forgotten most of my really great ideas. So the whiteboard, I wrote on the whiteboard, money blocks. And I had this moment where I realized what was happening is she was handling money through a certain lens and he was handling money through a certain lens, but they were both blocked at seeing what was actually true. And so what happens is when we have these like events that happen in our lives and everybody's got them, you've got them, I've got them, whoever's listening, you've got one. And what happened was at some point in your life, there was an event that occurred and it had a bit of an emotional charge to it. That's why you remember it. It's why it became a memory. So you have this like emotional charge where you experience something and then you make it mean something because you're trying to make sense of it, especially when you're younger. And so for some people, it's as simple as, you know, their sister got a larger piece of cake. And so they started to feel like they weren't worthy or whatever, like anything. You can really pull these out of anywhere. But what that does then, if you're not conscious of what you're choosing, if you're choosing a disempowering meaning or an empowering meaning, if you're not conscious of it, it forms a pattern. So then you start to look for things that are true. So you start to look for ways that you're unworthy, or you start to look for ways that your sister's the family favorite, or you start to look for ways, and that forms part of your identity. And so I started to really uncover like, wow, there are what I figured out to be 8 different kind of major money blocks that prevent people from building wealth. And when those people are in relationship with each other, where those blocks intersect, then forms the pattern in the relationship. So for example, money blocks are things like the lack block, right? That's a style of thinking where you believe there's never going to be enough. And so you're always looking at life and money, career, wealth, everything through the lens of like, I'm never going to have enough. And somebody else might have a, what we call a spend block. So they're blocked from building wealth because every time money hits their account, they need to get rid of it. They don't trust themselves with their own resources. They don't feel whatever they feel, right? So they're spending right away. And when a person with a lack block marries a person with a spend primary spend block, where those two blocks intersect, now I can look at them and be like, oh, I know exactly what all of your money fights are about. I know exactly what's happening here. And we can heal that, right? Because we have to heal the lack block and the spend block first. You'll see it with your friends. Like you'll be out for dinner with your friends after you read this book and you'll be like, somebody will be fighting over the bill. And you're like, oh, I know what that person's got a worthiness block. That person, like you can kind of start to see the patterns, but we often don't recognize them in ourselves. And so this work really came about because I was literally sitting with Peggy and Harold. Yeah. And yeah. I had this moment where it was like, even though I didn't know them, I could see how they got here. And so I worked with them for quite a long time to kind of unravel. And they eventually didn't get a divorce. They're very happily married today. And I'm very happy that they didn't get a divorce. Because in the moment, it seemed like a divorce would be a lot easier. But what happened was they just had to peel away all of their layers and heal the thing that had made them believe that they were, you know, that their way of being or their way of handling money was the right way, even though it wasn't giving them the results that they wanted, and allow them to kind of see each other instead of, for the behaviors they had today, see them as, you know, sometimes the child or the earlier version of themselves that created that pattern as a kind of survival mechanism, and love that person wholly and completely and unconditionally for who they are. And then everything starts to change. Your relationship starts to improve. We always joke that you get good in the spreadsheets, you get good in the bed sheets. Like that gets better. You're kinder, you're more patient. Money just flows to you differently. Abundance starts to flow in all areas, right? So it's like that thing of, it's a combination of mathematics, and I hate to say that because I am terrible at math and people have a hard time believing that, but I'm terrible at math, but I understand human behavior. And you can be bad at math and be very wealthy. So it's a combination of like those kind of mathematics, like those patterns, those knowing what to do with your money. But then it's also a combination of not self-sabotaging as you go. And that's true for money and finances and careers and relationships and health and all of the things.
That was well said. That was good.
I hope it makes sense.
You're good at this. And I think the book's really well laid out in that at first you are, as the reader, invited to explore your own blocks and to cultivate an awareness of where you are at. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, the exercise of doing that evokes a little bit of sensation. It's like a little tenderness. And then later in the book, you sort of transition into the work required to have these conversations with another person who is also feeling what you've just felt through these exercises. And they're coming at it from a completely different way, right? And so the different blocks, I think, are somewhat analogous to different love languages, where someone might be a gift giver and someone else might be a physical toucher or a words of affirmation person. And it's not wrong. It's just a different way of experiencing life. And the better that you can understand and communicate in these ways, the better off your relationship's going to be, the more progress, the more efficient, the less conflict, et cetera.
Yes.
But a fair.
That's efficient. Brilliant.
Okay.
And you said it so much more succinctly and elegantly than I did.
No. Aaron, you're doing great. You had the Peggy and the Herald reference. I mean, I had no imaginary people in that, just sharing my own thing. What do you call it after the title of the book? Subtitle?
Yeah.
The subtitle of your book is Ending Money Fights with Your Partner Forever, which is killer. And I imagine was like really well workshopped. So Ending Money Fights Forever. Can you talk a little bit more about why these conflicts arise when we have different blocks and then how to sort of negotiate those conflicts?
Yeah. And this is a big theme in the book because what's really funny is when I started to do this work with couples, because of course, before you write a book about it, you have to like put it into practice and make sure that your theories are correct and, you know, like all of those things, right? And so working with couples over the last couple of decades through this kind of work, it's interesting because I used to just be like, here's the quiz, you do the quiz, you kind of figure out what your primary block is. It's not going to be 100% accurate because you're going to be triggered by something some days, but you'll generally have a primary block and, you know, a secondary block. And some people are like, I have all the blocks. I'm like, fair. It's okay. You just pick one and you work through it as you go. And then you work on the next one if you've got another one. But what was interesting is I used to do the work with people and instantly, and it was always women. I don't know why. So I'm sure that that's not a gender thing. Okay. So to my fellow uteruses out there, I'm not picking on you, but what was typically happening was I would give you the money blocks and then instantly you'd say, oh, this one's my partner's. My partner has this block. I'm going to go. So then they'd go to their partner and be like, let me tell you what your problem is. Your problem is this is your, right? And I was like, whoa, this is not healing work here, right? But I think it's the same reason people take their partners to therapy, right? They're like, they're just hoping the therapist is going to tell them that their partner's wrong, right? That's like, they just want that referee. And so the theme throughout the whole book is you really have to heal your own block, because when you are in a pattern with somebody, you can break that pattern simply by healing your own block. They don't even have to change in order for you to heal and start to be better financially. They don't have to heal it. Nothing about them has to change. And the other piece about it is it has to be really safe for your partner to stay exactly the same, because not everybody wants to grow. Not everybody wants to change. And one of the things I hear so often in personal development, I'm sure you do too, is when people start a trajectory of growth in their own life and their partner's disinterested, they're like, how do I get my partner on board? And the answer is you can't. You have to just love them wholly and completely for who they are. And if you get to that place where you're like, well, I'm doing all this work and my partner's not doing any, and it's really frustrating, then you haven't done enough work yet. Because it's not until you get to the place where you're like, you're okay with who they are, and you're also okay with who they may become, that you're actually at that place of unconditional love for them and you. So it's just such an important piece of the work that we understand. All of this is going to stem, every piece in the book is going to stem from you healing your own blocks first. And if your partner decides to heal their blocks, great. And if they don't, great. But usually what will happen is when you start to do this work and you're tracking, you know, your net worth, or you're tracking your whatever version of your finances you're trying to improve, as you're making progress, that's usually then when a partner will be like, wait a second, what are you doing? And that's your invitation to be like, oh, you could, you know, check this out and see if it resonates with you. And if it doesn't, great. And if it does, wonderful. But that's sort of like the how things start to change and heal. It really does mean that you have to do the work for you and no one else.
Yeah, it's such a simple, powerful, difficult to implement idea, right? It's like you just love them where they're at. You're like, well, yeah, but I mean, can I be more right a little bit? Or but I think, to your point, one of the best ways to demonstrate the impacts of growth and progress is to embody it and to live it, right? And I'm sure we all have experiences where somebody in your life starts changing in a really beautiful, powerful way, whether that's getting more fit or focusing on their health or dressing a little better or cleaning up the house a little nicer. And it's like, hang on, there's a bit of an energetic vibe happening. And I know when I experience those individuals, I'm curious. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you eating? What's your workout routine? Like, what's going on with you? Like, talk to me. I notice it. I see it. I want some of that. Yeah. Versus people that are like, oh, you got to try this new fitness program. You got to eat these spirulina celery sticks. You got to like try it. It's like, nah, man, I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
But when you're living it,
yeah,
it's quite different.
It is. That's such a powerful metaphor.
Okay. And so in the book, in life, you are harnessing this idea of self-awareness and self-acceptance and self-love of where you're at, what your blocks are, with equanimity, radical approval. So what do you do though? You read this book, you're doing the work, and your partner's like, nah, I don't care about that book. Aaron, Sky, Kelly, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Screw her. Yeah.
Yeah, screw her. Like, we're good. We have money. We're fine. Right? But then the other person is like, this is analogous to, I want to go to therapy. And they're like, nah, we're good. Everything's fine. But I imagine there are certain people in certain relationships where it gets to a place where you're like, yeah, I love them unconditionally. And I'm at this point where I don't want to be in this partnership anymore. Like, love and light to them, but like, I'm going over here.
And that was going to happen anyway. That's the important piece to know, right? Is that it was going to happen whether you lost 20 pounds and, you know, grew some nice guns. It was going to happen whether you, you know, made some big strides in your career. That was going to happen. That's got nothing to do with the money or the, like, it just was the path. And so that's challenging, right? There may be points even in this book, if you've got one of those relationships where you're like, do I stay? Do I go? This book is going to shine the flashlight on the answer for you, which is tough because it's like, you think it's a money book, but like you said, you've solved the mystery already. You figured out that it's a little bit more, right? But it's not meant to do it in a very harmful way. And you will be able to leave with a sense of peace if that's what it is for you. We were talking earlier about the thing we're not supposed to talk about. And in my own life, when I've hit a crossroads like that, it wasn't the trying to decide was the part that was challenging. Once the decision was made, the relief happened. And so I think people wait sometimes when they're stuck at that crossroads. They're like, I just want to know the answer. The answer doesn't come until you make the decision. You don't know it was the right decision until you've made one. That's the powerful part of choosing. So that's where it gets tricky, because I think there's so many people who are stuck in a crossroads, whether it be their money or be their relationship or whatever it is that they're in. It's tough, because the more you sit and wait for the right answer, the more you delay your own happiness and progress.
Dang, you just went deep, Aaron Sky Kelly.
Sorry. You want to talk about back cracks again?
No, it's so true. And it's so challenging to confront. But I will affirm that your book does an excellent job of simply shining light and asking questions and doing it in a really humorous, like, you're super funny. Like, your writing occasionally had me chortling. I'm like, wow, she put that in her book. That's incredible.
It's amazing what they made me cut out of the book. So, you know, one day I'll send you the manuscript because I think you'd enjoy that, but I don't think the general public would.
But like when you get a DVD back in the day and you have the bonus features or whatever, just a list of all your jokes that didn't make the cut would be pretty funny.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so the book's out. You've got decades of experience. What are some of the things that you're hearing from people that have read the book? Like, have you gotten good feedback, surprising feedback, a bit of everything?
People are so awesome. Like, this is always the part that, you know, because I have the worthiness block. And so it's one of the things that I'm always working through. And so in the beginning, of course, the people who buy your book right off the bat are all the people who love you or who love your previous work, or they're already fans, right? So the feedback is always so great. We're about 6 months away from the bridge trolls coming out to be like, this girl used the word twat waffle in her book and whatever, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's coming. So early feedback is always so tough because part of me is like, oh, but they're like, they're my, you know what I mean? They're in my inner circle. Of course, they're going to say nice things. And so it's hard because I really try not to listen to any feedback except for those heart whispers that you're talking about. I try not to listen to the high highs and I try not to listen to the low lows. I try and just like stay focused on the path, but it really has been phenomenal feedback. Like it's too new to really know. It's only been out for just a little bit, but part of me is like that piece that, you know, when you put a new piece of art into the world, or when you've done this many times, you've created so many really cool things, you put it out there and you have to put it out because your soul makes you put it out. And so but there's always a part of your humanness that's like, oh, I hope people like it. I hope they get it. And so far they do, which is such a huge blessing, but I really won't know the answer to that question for another 6 months. So.
Yeah, it is so tender to then hear these nice things, but then intentionally having to keep them at arm's length and not, you know, use that as validation for what your work is. Because if you expose yourself to the good stuff, then you also have to expose yourself to the bad stuff.
Yeah.
It's a package deal.
And it's opinions. Like, I've been wrong before too, right? The first time I watched Arrested Development, I was like, this show's stupid. I know. I was wrong.
I thought that about Ted Lasso.
Did you?
Yeah. The first two episodes.
You can't say that publicly. You're going to have to bleep that out.
Yeah. I watched it and was like, yeah, I don't get, like, I'm a big soccer fan too. I've like played it my whole life. I'm like, this is dumb. And then just stopped watching it for months. Yeah. And then saw the hype, talked to a couple people I really adore. And I was like, all right, I'll give it another try.
That's
fair. This is
brilliant. And so if you had to write a review on Ted Lasso that first week, you'd have written some scathing stuff, right? So it's like, it's the piece of like understanding that everybody's entitled to an opinion, but it can't influence the level you show up at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think is the most important takeaway from your second book, Naked Money Meetings? Like, if you had to really just download that into everybody's nervous system or psyche, like, what do you want people to leave with?
It's absolutely critical that you become financially free, because there are so many people we can't help if we're not in a position to help. And there are so many people in the world who are taking advantage of people financially. I'm talking mostly corporations and things like that. And I don't mean to sound like, I'm not one of those political, I'm not like over here being like, Jeff Bezos must die. Like, I'm not like that at all, right? But I just think like sometimes we really get blind to what's actually going on in the world. And I think it's so important that we are in a position of abundance so that we can make major change where it's necessary. There's so many systemic issues with people in power. Like, yes, I understand this book is really written a lot about mindset. And so it's about like personal responsibility and all of that. But the truth is there are people who live on our planet who don't have that luxury. And so if you are somebody who is in a position of privilege to be able to purchase a book or get one from your library or something like that, it's important for you to do this work so that we can free more people, because otherwise we're just going to end up with so many more adults who are working in a job they hate in order to pay for things that they bought 5 years ago on some kind of credit, and who then get trapped into missing a lifetime of experiences, like going to Spain with Jer and doing the Camino, because they have an obligation that they have to meet that brings them zero joy.
Yeah. So this book, when I said was a Trojan horse for personal development, I feel like it's one of those little Russian dolls where, like, in the Trojan horse personal development, we're talking about the liberation of the planet.
That's
profound. That's level. Right.
If you pull the horse apart, I'm like the butt of the horse and you're the head of the horse. You know what I mean? We're in that like horse costume. Yeah.
Like, let's go. But it is important. And you talk about that in the book of like, hey, you know, if you spend X amount of dollars a day at Starbucks, X amount of dollars a month, that $40 a month, whatever, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But when you add that up over a year, and then you think about the impacts of compounded interest moving through time in a decade or two, suddenly your perspective is much different to the day-to-day one that you routinely have based upon your patterns, triggers, habits.
And I don't hate on Starbucks because I drink it every day. And I don't hate on, you know, any habits that anybody has, but I do think they need to be made consciously. I think as long as you know what you're choosing and why, and also that it's not derailing you from your ultimate goal. You don't want to wake up at the age of 70 and be like, I wish I would have planned for retirement. I wish I would have taken better care of my health. I wish I would have asked that girl out on a date. Like, you want to make sure that you are experiencing as much of this as you can, getting the most out of it as you can. And that's easier to do when you've got resources.
Yeah. And you do an excellent job in the book of, I feel like I haven't criticized the book at all. And I feel
hit me with the criticism.
No, I don't necessarily. I'm just, when I started to offer another thing that I liked, there was a part of my brain that was like, bro, you sound like just like a paid cheerleader right now. Like a champion. Like, you're not giving the listener the full deal, you know? Like, it's just such a one-sided opinion. But I really do think it's a good book. And I think that if anybody listening is having financial blocks, even single, maybe we should hit that, because like, this is branded as a book for couples to have end your money fights with your partner. I could see people being like, why me? Well, I don't have a partner. Like, why the heck do I need to read this book? I don't fight with anybody. Like, I'm the dictator of the household. Like, I'm good. Like, what do you say to that fictitious person I just made up?
Jonah.
Jonah.
What's interesting about that is when we were designing the book and we were trying to figure out how we were going to present it. And, you know, when you go through all that work with your publisher and your editors and all of that, that whole conversation came up so many times, and we were really just trying to figure out, do we market it to everybody? Do we market it to just, you know, what do we do? And so it was born out of that conversation with Harold and Peggy.
Peggy.
And, that's only now the only names I'm ever going to remember them as. But so it really was about that, because really where those money blocks intersect was where this powerful work came from. But what's been interesting from all the singles that have read it is they were like, they can look back on all their past relationships and been like, oh, I see. I understand what was going on there. I understand where his pain was coming from or her pain was coming from. And the other nice thing about it is as you're dating, if that is of interest to you, like lots of single people are interested in maybe one day being in another relationship, this really gives you a framework for listening to people as they're talking about everything from money to their family relationships to what's going on. You'll be able to hear little blocks in their language, and you'll be able to kind of get a better handle of where their pain is coming from so that you can more tenderly carry their heart. So you're not like walking around accidentally stepping on buttons or landmines for them, so that you guys aren't triggering each other. And so that you're really like listening and having honest conversations about who you are and what you value without being like, oh, that's not, you know, just pay off your credit card every month. That's what you should do. Like all of that kind of language and stuff like that. I think it's just a critical book for anybody who has a relationship with money. And ultimately, I wish we had just called the book, you know, instead of Naked Money Meetings, Ending Money Fights with Your Partner Forever, I wish we had just said Ending Money Struggles Forever. It's really what we should have called it.
Yeah. Because most everybody has friends or family, even if you've never been in a relationship, it's like you're involved with this. If you have to go and buy things or talk about purchases or make plans. But when you were talking about looking back at the past conflicts or arguments and having those aha moments, I've had similar reflections when I've learned about love languages or boundaries or codependency or communication styles. It's like, oh, dang.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have saved me so much time 3 years ago and a lot of heartbreak if I had just known about this book or this podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to check my text messages.
Yes.
Well, this is going to be super anticlimactic.
She's probably with clients all day. She's so busy.
She's busy. Let's see. But as I do this, it's loading. It's like connecting to Wi-Fi and shit.
Okay.
Any final thoughts? Anything that we missed where you're like, Jeremy, bro, why haven't you asked me this? Or
no, I don't want. I'm just here to see your face and connect. It's been too long, and you know, I haven't talked to you since the Camino, so I needed to know about all that, and I needed to know all the things. So
she wrote me back.
She did.
Yeah. She said, "I'm holding it up for you." Ha ha ha. Yup.
That's all we get, Vienna.
Yeah. She played violin at Whitney Houston's wedding, so hopefully amazing. That's like record.
That's we need video. We need video.
Oh, that's cool. You're the best. I just adore you. I've known you for years. I just think that you're one of the people in this whole entire space, money, personal development aside, that approaches it with compassion, humility, humor, and integrity. I think you walk the talk, and I trust you. And so I think for those listening, like, that's my stamp of approval for Aaron Sky Kelly. And it's meaningful. I know that you know there are a lot of fucking razzle dazzle charlatan sellers out there manipulating people about their money stories in an unethical way. And I think you're kind of doing it in your own unique way, talking about, what did you say, twat waffle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I interviewed Alex Catoni the other day and she said douche nozzle. And so I feel like there's a thing happening in this space where the women are just like owning it.
Yeah.
She has on her website. Have you met Alex? Do you know her?
You and I, do you remember how you met her? You and I were, you'd sent me, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong person. Didn't you send me one time on Instagram? You're like, hey, check this girl out. Like, she seems super cool. And I was like, oh my gosh, she is cool. Isn't that who we were talking about?
I don't remember and that.
Then that started your, I got to go back through our DMs then.
But Alex Catoni, she is super cool. And on her website, she says her mission is to de-douchify the internet.
I love that.
You would like her.
I think we're both thinking of the same person. You and I talked about her. Not that
Jackson's
I like.
Jackson's partner.
Look at me trying to like pee a circle around this, like as if I've got some like, you know.
Did you pee a circle around it?
You know what I mean? Like you and I, hang on. You sent me her thing. This was like, I got to go back.
I don't know.
Like a year or two. How long have you known her?
Oh, no. What, 5-6 years? No, six
okay,
or seven
it's not
years?
Her, I don't think it's her then. Cause I'm like going back. I'm like, there's our Spirit Airlines conversations.
Oh, geez. Like,
here's our, yeah, your, just yeah. all of our memes hang that on. We send back and forth and jokes.
Aaron, hang on. So Aaron Sky Kelly, you've got two books, Get the Hell Out of Debt, Naked Money Meetings. You've got an Instagram account. You have a website. Are there other places that you would direct people to get into your space?
I'm just Googleable. That's the only thing. Okay. Oh, no, I don't know her. Okay, I was wrong. Sorry. I'm following her now. Following right now.
She's a marketing expert.
She's gorgeous. Also, I really like people who like radiate that. Like she just radiates awesomeness through her face.
She's a vibe. She's got like big energy and she's bubbly and she's a genius. Like she's so good. Anyway.
No, you can Google me, but I just also wanted to say that I really love your podcast. And I just think it's so important that you keep doing this because I know you were just giving me a million compliments there a moment ago when I was pretending not to hear you. But
yeah, I noticed what that. Your wordiness block just had a whole fortress up. I was like, she's not even...
No, but what I was going to say to you was you can only see those things in me because you've got them in you. And I just think what you do here is so cool. And I'm just so grateful that we're buds.
Yeah, back at you. Is it random? But have you given a TED Talk?
No, because no, let's just say no.
Because why? You can't just do that on a podcast.
I'm deathly shy. And so when I do talks or when I do, I try and avoid a lot of internet stuff. You'll see that on my Instagram. It's one of the things I work hardest on. My dream is to live in the forest with a bunch of forest animals and write books and hide from humanity because I'm deathly shy.
You want to be like the Snow White of money and finances.
And so now we have a team of people who are like taking bits and clips of me from the internet and like making content because I refuse to. So that's how we get around that, because if it were up to me.
Well, I can send you the video from this and your team can work its magic.
Oh, it's good. It's fine. No, we're good.
But I was just thinking like this would be a really cool TED Talk. Like I think you've got one in you. And
yeah, I think you could do it for me. That'd be great. You could.
I've done one.
I know you have. It's killer.
Yeah, I had a beard and everything. It was a different life. I was a different man.
You were.
But I mean, that might be like, you know, I'll just plant the seed. You don't have to do anything, of course, but I could see you on that red circle being like, yo, let's talk about naked money meetings and what is it? Twat waffles.
It'd take a lot of bravery, but I will ruminate on that for a good solid 3 hours before I decide to not do anything about it.
All right. So if you're listening, I'll put links to all our stuff in the show notes. Thank you, Aaron, Sky Kelly. You're the fucking best. This has been a ride and a half, and I just appreciate you. So come back anytime.
Thanks, bud. I called you bud, like you're 8.
I told you, I warned you in the introduction, this is a crazy one. This is a playful one. This is silly and outrageous and hilarious. I don't lie when it comes to podcast introductions. As mentioned, Aaron's got a new book, Naked Money Meetings. It's great. I've read most of it and much of it, and highly recommend it. She's wonderful. As mentioned, there are links in the show notes. You can check her out on Instagram, read her website, learn more about her. And thank you for being here. Thanks for supporting the work. Please do share this with anybody that you think would enjoy and benefit from this conversation. And also, if you love Aaron, make sure and check out the early episode that we did. I think it's number 28. It was years ago. Very different dialogue. We talk about much more serious things. Well, we talk about a lot of different things. And she's great. So thanks for being here. Share it. Spread the word. Leave the 5-star reviews. Follow me on Instagram at longdistancelovebombs. I appreciate you. I adore you. Keep trying to make kindness cool and empathy popular. Talk to you soon.